Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Scheduled Incarnations. Text 23. Please repeat. Asmat.
Asmat.
Unto us.
Unto us.
Beginning from Brahma.
Beginning from Brahma.
Down to the insignificant ant.
Down to the insignificant ant.
Prasada.
Prasada.
Causeless mercy.
Causeless mercy.
Sumukha.
Sumukha.
So inclined.
So inclined.
Kalaya.
Kalaya.
With his plenary extensions.
With his plenary extensions.
Kalesha.
Kalesha.
The Lord of all potencies.
The Lord of all potencies.
Ikshvaku.
Ikshvaku.
Maharaj Ikshvaku.
Maharaj Ikshvaku.
In the dynasty of the sun. Vamshe.
Vamshe.
Family.
Family.
Avatirya.
Avatirya.
By descending in.
By descending in.
Guru.
Guru.
Of the father or spiritual master.
Of the father or spiritual master.
Nideshe.
Nideshe.
Under the order of.
Under the order of.
Tishtan.
Tishtan.
Being situated in.
Being situated in.
Vanam.
Vanam.
In the forest.
In the forest.
Sadayita Anuja.
Sadayita Anuja.
Along with his wife and younger brother.
Along with his wife and younger brother.
Avivesha.
Avivesha.
Entered.
Entered.
Yasmin.
Yasmin.
Unto whom?
Unto whom?
Virudhya.
Virudhya.
Being rebellious.
Being rebellious.
Dashakandara.
Dashakandara.
Ravana.
Ravana.
Who had 10 heads.
Who had 10 heads.
Artim.
Artim.
Great distress.
Great distress.
Archat.
Archat.
Achieved.
Achieved.
Translation. Due to his causeless mercy upon all living entities within the universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with his plenary extensions, appeared in the family of Maharaj Ikshvaku as the Lord of his internal potency, Sita. Under the order of his father, Maharaj Dasharath, he entered the forest and lived there for considerable years with his wife and younger brother. Ravana, who was very materially powerful, with 10 heads on his shoulders, committed a great offense against him and was thus ultimately vanquished. purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Rama is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his brothers, namely Bharat, Lakshman, and Shatrughna, are his plenary expansions. All four brothers are Vishnu Tattva and were never ordinary human beings. There are many unscrupulous and ignorant commentators on Ramayana who present the younger brothers of Lord Ramachandra as ordinary living entities. But here in Srimad Bhagavatam, the most authentic scripture on the science of Godhead, it is clearly stated that his brothers were his plenary expansions. Originally, Lord Ramachandra is the incarnation of Vasudeva. Lakshman is the incarnation of Shankarshan. Bharat is the incarnation of Pradyumna, and Shatrughna is the incarnation of Aniruddha, expansions of the personality of Godhead. Lakshmiji Sita is the internal potency of the Lord, and is neither an ordinary woman nor the external potency incarnation of Durga. Durga is the external potency of the Lord, and she is associated with Lord Shiva. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 4:7, the Lord appears when there are discrepancies in the discharge of factual religion. Lord Ramachandra also appeared under the same circumstances, accompanied by his brothers, who are expansions of the Lord's internal potency, and by Lakshmiji Sita Devi. Lord Ramachandra was ordered by his father, Maharaj Dasarath, to leave home for the forest under awkward circumstances. And the Lord, as the ideal son of his father, carried out the order, even on the occasion of his being declared the king of Ayodhya. One of his younger brothers, Lakshmanji, desired to go with him, and so also his eternal wife, Sitaji, desired to go with him. The Lord agreed to both of them, and altogether they entered the Dandakaranya forest to live there for 14 years. During their stay in the forest, there was some quarrel between Ramachandra and Ravana, and the latter kidnapped the Lord's wife, Sita. The quarrel ended in the vanquishing of the greatly powerful Ravana, along with all his kingdom and family. Sita is Lakshmiji, or the goddess of fortune, but she is never to be enjoyed by any living being. She is meant for being worshipped by the living being, along with her husband, Sri Ramachandra. A materialistic man like Ravana does not understand this great truth. But, on the contrary, he He wants to snatch Sita Devi from the custody of Rama and thus incurs great miseries. The materialists who are after opulence and material prosperity may take lessons from the Ramayana that the policy of exploiting the nature of the Lord without acknowledging the supremacy of the Supreme Lord is the policy of Ravana. Ravana was very advanced materially, so much so that he turned his kingdom, Lanka, into pure gold or full material wealth. But because he did not recognize the supremacy of Lord Ramachandra and defied him by stealing his wife, Sita, Ravana was killed and all his opulence and power were destroyed. Lord Ramachandra is a full incarnation with six opulences in full, and he is therefore mentioned in this verse as Kalesha, or master of all opulence. Translation again. Due to his causeless mercy upon all living entities within the universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with his plenary extensions, appeared in the family of Maharaj Ikshvaku as the Lord of his internal potency, Sita, under the order of his father, Maharaj Dasarath. He entered the forest and lived there for considerable years with his wife and younger brother. Ravana, who was very materially powerful, with 10 heads on his shoulders, committed a great offense against him and was thus ultimately vanquished. So we are continuing our observance of the appearance of Lord Ramachandra by discussing his appearance and activities as described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the most authentic of all Vedic scriptures, and just within one verse there are volumes of meanings. In one word there are volumes of meanings. One word is Kalesha, that the Lord Ramachandra is the Isha, or controller of all Kalas, or potencies. He's Sad Aishwarya Purna. He is the full, complete, supreme personality of Godhead. And he appeared Kalaya with his plenary extensions. Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna, who are also in the same category of Vishnu Tattva. They are not ordinary living beings. And he appeared with Sita Devi, who is also not an ordinary living being, but she is the Lord's internal potency, Lakshmiji. And why did he appear? Asmat. Asmat means for us. He appeared for us. To show mercy. So the Lord appears to show mercy to the living entities. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chanduskritam dharmasam stapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. That in order to deliver the pious devotees and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I appear in every millennium. Dharma. What is Dharma? Dharma is the orders of God, the laws of God, and they are meant to help us to progress in life. Just like in ordinary affairs, if someone breaks the law, he will be punished. So in the same way, when we violate the laws of God or act against Dharma, we suffer. And the Lord, not wanting us to suffer, appears Dharma Samstapanarthaya, to reestablish the principles of religion. That is his mercy. Some people may be rebellious, as Ravana was described in the purport. They may be rebellious. Why do we have to follow all these rules? Why can't we just do what we want? Why do we have to have so many restrictions? But these restrictions are for our benefit. When we come into the material world and accept a material body, we are in a diseased condition. The body itself is the emblem of our disease. And in the diseased condition, we are forced to suffer. There are three different kinds of sufferings. Those caused by other living entities, those caused by our own minds and bodies, and those caused by acts of nature. And we're always suffering at one time. One of the three may be more prominent than another, but we're always suffering. And then there's the repetition of birth, death, old age, and disease. So we're in a disease condition and we are suffering. And a diseased person has to follow restrictions to get out of the disease. And unless and until he or she gets out of the disease, he can't enjoy life. A father or mother may have several children, might have five children, and one of the children may be sick. So the mother prepares nice food for the other four, but the fifth cannot eat the same food because it will make that child sicker. So the mother withholds that food. But that is not discrimination or partiality. The mother loves all the children. The mother wants the best for all the children. But the one who's diseased has to be restricted so that the child can get better. So we are all diseased. We've come into the material world. We have bodies that are subject to so much pain and discomfort, and they limit us in so many ways. So to become free from that disease, to be cured of our disease, we have to follow the restrictions. And in any regimen, there are do's and don'ts. You should take this medicine, but you should not eat that food. We don't like it. Sometimes the doctor will say, don't eat sweets. Don't eat sugar. We like to eat sweets. Like to eat sugar. But if we don't follow the doctor's directions, we will suffer more. We may temporarily enjoy the sweet food, but ultimately we suffer more. So there are certain don'ts, and then there are certain do's. The doctor may say, take some medicine. Sometimes the medicine is bitter. Some Chinese medicine, herbal medicine, can be very bitter. Take all the herbs and put them in it. One devotee actually told me recently, she's under this Chinese herbalist's care. Like every morning, puts all these leaves and branches and things in a pot, boils them up, an hour and a half, boiling, simmering, and it tastes terrible. But she takes it because it helps, it's her medicine. So sometimes we have to take a medicine we don't like, sometimes we have to give up something we do like, but an intelligent person, a sane person, a sober person will do it to get out of this miserable condition. Otherwise, we have to suffer more. Now, in terms of our mentality or our consciousness, because basically our activities are an expression of our consciousness. So the healthy consciousness is that Rama or Krishna is the Supreme Lord. I am his part and parcel servant. Everything belongs to him, including me. and therefore I and everything else is meant to be engaged in his service. That is the healthy mentality or the normal mentality. The diseased mentality or the abnormal mentality is I am the enjoyer. I am the controller. I am the proprietor. Why should I worship anyone else? People should worship me. So, although these thoughts may not be so clear in our consciousness, but if we observe our behavior and our moods, we will see that underlying our behavior is the mentality that we want to be in the place of the Lord. We want to be the enjoyer. We want to be the controller. We want to be the proprietor in the bodily concept of life. This is the mentality of every materialistic person, every conditioned soul, basically every conditioned soul. So we work to earn money so we can have a nice house, a good car, good food, a nice family life, good respect in society. So many things we want. And those things in and of themselves are not bad, but when we pursue them, making ourselves the center, and we all do make ourselves the center, then either God is not in the picture at all, or he's somewhere in the background. Somewhere in the background means we want him to fulfill our desires, our material desires. And most religious people want God to fulfill their material desires. They're in the bodily concept of life. They want to enjoy the material world. But being a little pious or religious, they don't want to lead sinful lives. They don't want to suffer gross sinful reactions. But they still want to enjoy life. They are the center, and they want God to serve them. And therefore, we have prayers. It's everywhere, but in the Christian tradition, we have prayers like, Lord, give us this day our daily bread. Now, that is an unnecessary prayer, because God is supplying food for all the living entities. Nityo nityanam, chaitanas chaitanam, eko yo vidudati kaman. This is the irony, that people work very hard, forgetting the Lord, for the sake of bread, when God is supplying bread to all living entities, whether they work for it or not. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of the donkey who carries a heavy load for the washerman, I've seen it in India. The foolish creature carries a heavy load, not his load, someone else's load. Carries a heavy load for someone else, so that at the end of the day, he gets some morsels of grass to eat. He's so foolish, he doesn't see that grass is everywhere. Grass is everywhere. But he thinks, if I don't carry this load for the washerman, he won't give me my grass at the end of the day, and I'll be hungry. So, we think that we are being fed by the sweat of our brow. By the sweat of our brow we are getting food. But actually it is not the fact. We are getting food by the mercy of the Lord. And some devotees are fortunate to have the experience of not getting food for a little while, or not getting success in a way, so that they realize that actually they are not the doers. They're being fed by the mercy of the Lord. They're not being fed by the sweat of their brow. But still, we continue in the same consciousness, even after hearing these instructions, because we don't have faith. We think that this is a very nice philosophy to hear in class or read in books, but we don't actually have faith that if we surrender to Krishna, he will take care of us. So we continue in the same way. A hard struggle for existence. And God is there, but in the background. Our God brother Burijan Prabhu said that most people, even devotees, neophyte devotees, they conceive of life as a drama, as a movie. And guess who the star of the movie is? Guess who the hero is? Guess who the heroine is? It's you. And everyone else is cast in supporting roles. They exist in that drama or that movie to support you in your heroic endeavors. And somehow God is like that too. Of course, now there aren't so many religious films in India, but I had a chance to see one or two, because when in the beginning they didn't have flights on the movies. Later they introduced in-flight films, and fortunately or unfortunately, on the route from Bombay to Mauritius, they introduced Hindi films. And in some of them, Krishna was there.
there would be a deity. But Krishna was in a supporting role. He was just there to make things happen for, you know, the benefit of the hero and heroine, so that ultimately they can, I guess, get together and live happily ever after. That's another illusion. So this is sort of in between. It's like Ravana, he wanted Sita without God. He wanted to enjoy the material opulence without God. And then there are true devotees or pure devotees. They want God to enjoy. They know that real life means serving God and pleasing God, and that their happiness lies in God's happiness. And then there's that in-between place where most of us might find ourselves. We don't want to enjoy material opulence without God, but at the same time we don't want to surrender everything to God. Surrender everything to God means to recognize the truth that everything belongs to Him. So we want to enjoy material opulence, but we want God there, but in a supporting role. So, what do we do if we have faith in the words of Srimad Bhagavatam? We will abandon this false pursuit of material happiness, this trying to be happy while diseased. It doesn't work. You can't be happy while you're diseased. You have to get cured, then you can be happy. But we don't want to take the cure. So we just continue in this folly. This folly. We remain in a diseased condition, remain in a material body, subject to miseries all the time, subject to limitations, because we don't want to take the medicine. We don't want to follow the prescription. So it's actually a foolish position to be in. It's coated over with a veneer of piety, but it's a foolish situation. We have to become cured. What is the question of enjoying while diseased? So these topics are like medicine that we drink through the ear. And although the topics are actually very sweet, but because of our disease condition we may find them to be bitter. Or we like them under certain circumstances. But the rest of the time, you know, the newspaper, the news magazines, the DVDs, the news programs. We're not able to relish the sweetness of these topics. But, as Rupa Goswami says, the conditioned soul is suffering from the disease of avidya, or ignorance, which is like jaundice. The Ayurvedic cure for jaundice is sugar candy, rock candy. But when you're diseased like that, the sugar candy tastes bitter. But still, it's your medicine, so you take it. And as you gradually recover, the sugar begins to taste sweeter and sweeter. And finally, when you're completely cured, you can relish it as it is, as sweet, like nectar. So in the beginning, because we are afflicted by this disease of ignorance, we may find the medicine a little bitter, but we take it anyway. And the more we take it and become cured, the more we relish it. So that's why we have regulative principles. Let's rise early in the morning. Ideally, attend Mangalarti or observe Mangalarti. Chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Study the scriptures. But not just as a ritual or a routine, but with an ardent desire to improve, to get cured. There's a very nice verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Yesham twantagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam. That people who are freed from sinful activities and who have engaged in pious activities and are free from the duality of delusion, they can engage in devotional service. And Srila Prabhupada explains what is this duality. The duality is thinking should I become Krishna conscious or not? Should I engage in devotional service or not? Should I sacrifice for Krishna or not? Or should I rather indulge my senses? It's only when we are free from that duality that we can really take to devotional service. And Srila Prabhupada explains, as long as we are in that duality, it means that we are still suffering from sinful reactions. And to the degree that we are suffering from sinful reactions, to that degree we will suffer the duality. Should I surrender to Krishna or not? Should I depend on Krishna or should I depend on my own resources? So actual devotional service is you know, requires some background of piety and freedom from sinful reactions. Or, if one is fortunate to receive the mercy of the Lord, mercy of the devotees, whatever one's condition is, he can just decide, all right, I'm going to dedicate this life to Krishna. In fact, Srila Prabhupada said that is the prerequisite for really progressing in devotional service. You have to have that determination that I must become Krishna conscious in this lifetime. I must make a permanent solution in this lifetime. I must become free from the repetition of birth and death in this lifetime. When one has that consciousness, he or she can actually engage in devotional service. So asmat, the Lord came for us. Us means Lord Brahma, down to the insignificant ant. Out of his mercy, he's displayed his pastimes to attract us to his service and to teach us the consequences of leading a materialistic life and being offensive to the Lord. Now, there are people who say, well, I'm a good person. Why do I have to be God conscious? I'm a good person. Isn't that enough? And the answer to that question is given in Srimad Bhagavatam. Yesham Purusha Sakshat. The meaning of the verse is that if one performs all of his duties according to Varnashram Dharma properly, but if he does not serve the Lord, he will fall down. So that's the answer to the question, why can't I just be a good person? Why do I have to worship God? And why is it that even following Varnashram Dharma, if one neglects the service of the Lord, he or she will fall down? The reason is that the Lord is our Father. And it is the duty of the son or daughter to be aware of his or her father and to serve him. It would not make sense for a child to say, I'm a good person, but I don't care for my parents. What does that mean? You're a good person, but you don't care for your parents? But that's what some people like to think. I can be a good person. I can be an honest person, a truthful person, a loving person, a caring person. Why do I have to think about God? Why do I have to worship God? But there's the answer, that he's your father. And the verse mentions either neglecting the Lord or defying the Lord. of course, to defy your parents is bad, but to neglect them is also bad. Either way, you fall down. So the idea we can just be good people, but not worship God, not serve God, not be conscious of God, is, well, you can try, but either you will have to become God conscious or you will fall down. You cannot remain a good person completely devoid of God consciousness. So we can develop that consciousness by hearing, reading the scriptures, hearing from realized souls who actually have conviction, and by their association you can also develop that conviction, because for them it's natural. We're in the disease condition, we have to make the effort, but for the realized souls it's natural. It's like the most natural thing. You serve God and he takes care of you. It's the most natural thing. But it doesn't mean that when you become a servant of the Lord, become a preacher, that you won't face difficulties. You will. One of the incarnations is Nrisimhadev. Prahlad, he was harassed by his father, so-called father, simply because he was a devotee. So it doesn't mean that becoming a devotee, you won't face difficulties. There will be opposition, just for becoming a devotee. Just for becoming a devotee, there will be opposition. But the Lord protects you. The Lord protects you. And the devotee has confidence in the Lord's protection, and therefore he takes the risk. In the sort of selfish mentality of religious conception, one wants the Lord to feed him. You know, give us this day our daily bread. But in the higher conception of pure devotional service, one wants to feed the Lord. Oh, the Lord is hungry, let me feed him. And Srila Prabhupada explains that what does that mean, the Lord is hungry, we have to feed him? What, you know, not that we want something and we want the Lord to fulfill our want, but we think the Lord wants something, so we want to fulfill his want. And what is his want? His want is that Krishna consciousness should be preached and spread. So when we come to the stage that we want to fulfill the Lord's want, not have the Lord fulfill our want, then we will preach. Dedicate our lives to the mission of the Lord and depend on his mercy and protection. So we're bound. There's all these ropes, illusory ropes, but there are all these ropes that bind us to the material world. Guna, modes of nature. Guna also means rope. And you know, we need to cut those ropes. Sadhu means to cut. He cuts our false attachments. Srila Prabhupada said, therefore, some people don't like sadhus. They come to cut their false attachments. Or knowledge. Fight armed with the sword of knowledge. That sword can cut our illusory attachments, our, the illusory ropes that bind us and free us, so that we can serve the Lord fully and experience what real healthy life, natural life, free life is. And I mentioned hearing the scriptures, and of course there's also chanting and hearing the holy name. But the same principle, chanting and hearing, will cleanse the dirty things from the heart, enable us to see things as they are, see ourselves as we are, see the Lord as He is, see our relationship with the Lord, and act accordingly. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments?
Maharaj, I have a question. There are two things, like one, we have to do everything for Krishna, and another thing is that we have to be grateful to Krishna that He has given us so much. So, I mean, when we read Prabhupada's books and everything, He again and again emphasizes that we have to do everything for Krishna. So, for example, when I have to cook in the morning, then if I try to do that, but after some time I come to that platform that I am doing it for my kids. I have to cook for my husband, I have to cook for my child, I have to cook. Ultimately I come to that platform. But when I take things in that way, that I have to pay gratitude to Krishna that He has given me so much, it becomes easier for me to do that. So how to cultivate more that tendency that everything is for Krishna. Right now it is not happening. Even if I try to do that, after some time I come to that level. I mean, when I cook, definitely when I plan a menu, even if I think I am cooking for Krishna, so that is somehow artificial for me, because ultimately I make a menu according to my own needs. That what do I need for myself today? How the food should be cooked? What my child will need? What my husband will need? Ultimately the menu revolves around that.
Well, your basic question is very good. Different people are on different levels, and we should not try to bypass certain stages on the way to perfection. But you're right. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has said that the basis of the sense of gratitude is that I'm the center and God is supplying, and I'm grateful to Him for supplying. Like a child being supplied by the parents, so he's grateful to the parents. He said that is not pure devotional service. In pure devotional service, there's no question of taking from God, and consequently there's no question of feeling grateful to Him for giving you something. In pure devotional service, the only thought is how to please God, how to make God happy, how to give God what he wants. But because we are generally to some extent on the bodily platform, and we do, you know, we do want things for ourselves and our families, it's better to appreciate what God has given us and be grateful to him than to complain that God hasn't given us enough and be resentful. So, you know, gratitude is it's a type of appreciation. Gratitude means appreciation, and appreciation is sort of a preliminary stage of love. It's a preliminary stage of love. So that's good. It's not the best, but it's good. And from good we can get better. At least he's someone that we want to have a relationship with, because we're appreciating that he's been kind to us. We think, you know, he's being mean to us, then, you know, we'll be more reserved about entering a relationship with him. But if we appreciate, oh, he's being kind, he's giving me so much, I don't deserve it, but still he's giving me so much, that's appreciation. And that's a sort of a, it's a part of love. It's a part of love. So it's good. It's a good beginning.
So the process will take us to that level for doing everything for Krishna?
Well, it depends how sincere you are. And it depends how hard you work. Depends how hard you work. But it's a good beginning.
And Maharaj, one more question. I generally get confused between these two words. What is the difference between devotion and devotional service? In Hindi we say devotion means bhakti. So I understand devotional service also Prabhupada always refers to bhakti.
Yeah.
They are the same thing.
Yeah. Devotional service is a good rendering of bhakti, because if you have devotion, you will naturally render service. Bhakti isn't just like in your mind, you know. So that's why I think the translation of bhakti as devotional service is perfect. It's perfect, because what's the meaning of devotion if you don't render service? But yeah, they could be taken as synonyms.
So you're not compassionate, so you're not in devotional service, though you might have great devotion for Lord. But if you are not compassionate, it may not be devotional service. Sometimes, even then, I'll just give my example. And my late daughter was talking about some kid in her class, and he or she died for some disease. So she came and told me, and she was immediately expecting some kind of compassion. And I don't know that kid, I haven't met that kid. So I just took it as a simple news. I mean, there was no more compassion coming from inside her. And she immediately realized that, Dad, you are not showing any compassion or not feeling any sad. I said, all I could say is because you stayed with that kid for a long time. You had feelings, you had relationships, so you feel bad that it is gone. So that compassion is there. But for me, whom I have not been in contact or seen, I do not have that compassion. But so how do I relate it to my devotion? Though I might have devotion for the Lord, but their compassion does not come immediately.
Well, again, it's you know, as you become free from the shackles of material life and come to know what it means to be free, then you can see how other people are bound and feel compassion for them and want to help them become free. The other answer is that, you know, they're all part and parcel of Krishna, and Krishna wants them to be happy. So if we're attached to Krishna, then we want him to be happy, and he'll be happy if they're delivered. You know, it's just like with Prabhupada, you know, he said, your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate together. So yeah, we might not particularly like another devotee, but we're thinking, oh, well, Prabhupada wants us to work together, so okay, leave that. Never mind, we have some little differences, leave that. We're cooperating for the sake of pleasing Prabhupada. So in the same way, okay, I might not particularly like that person, but that person is part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna wants that person back, so let me try.
Would that mood of thinking of them, that I'm actually doing this as an opportunity to serve a devotee, happen to be...
Yeah, that's exactly what our consciousness should be. We're thinking, hey, these are devotees, and you know, if I please them not in a devotional way, not sense gratification, I please them in a devotional way, Krishna will, they'll be pleased, and Krishna will be pleased. So if you're cooking and you're thinking, my daughter is a devotee, you know, if she gets good prasad, she'll be encouraged in Krishna consciousness. So let me make good prasad for her that she will like and will be healthy for her, because it will be favorable for her Krishna consciousness. Then that's spiritual. So it's not the contemplation of the menu that makes it material or spiritual, but it's the reason. You know, if you think, oh, if I cook something really good, she'll really like me, and the person is not in it, then think, oh, this will encourage her in Krishna consciousness. It'll, you know, and then I can, because that's what we want to do when people give us appreciation or affection. We want to transfer that to Krishna. We want to use that for Krishna. So if it culminates in bringing her or whoever you're cooking for, bringing them closer to Krishna, then that's Krishna consciousness.
Well, we'll take one more question from Revati. I could see from Krishna Kirtan's smile. He's thinking it's time to get encouraged in Krishna consciousness by having Mataji's good prasad.
I don't want to discourage the I just was hoping you could speak a little more. You were talking about don't jump over stages. Could you elaborate a little more on that?
Yeah. In other words, okay, we know that feeling gratitude is a lower stage in the sense that we're thinking in terms that God has given me this, so I feel grateful. We're not thinking what I can give to God, we're thinking what God has given to me. But that's good for our, it may be good for our stage. But if we think, oh, gratitude, that's lower, you know, I'm not going to indulge in gratitude. Well, if you're in the mood of serving God and pleasing God, that's fine. But if instead of gratitude you feel, you know, anger and resentment and bitterness and those things, then for you it's better to feel grateful. For you that. And we're not always in the same state of consciousness all the time, you know. We all have, you know, sometimes we feel bitter and resentful. Sometimes we feel grateful. Sometimes we feel, I just want to serve Krishna. So if we're in that sort of, if we're in that stage of feeling, like they say, you know, you shouldn't see the hole, you should see the donut. So if we're in the stage we're just seeing the hole, then we should see the donut. Oh, God has given me a donut. Okay, there's a hole in it, but he's given me a donut. But then if we're in that mood, we're saying, oh, God has given me a donut, he's so kind, I should do something for him. And that's the next stage.
Something related to what the earlier discussion was. And many times this must have been asked, that sometimes we become too selfish in Krishna consciousness, that we start ignoring our own family, our parents. Like many people who have moved to US, their parents want to.
This is a very good question you've raised. And as I was speaking, I knew that I was speaking of the ideal situation, and therefore in relation to Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu, I mentioned Hiranyakashipu was his so-called father. The Bhagavatam says, you know, Guru Nasasyat, Pita Nasasyat. One should not become a guru, a father, a mother, a husband, or any sort of worshipable personality, unless he can deliver his dependent from the repetition of birth and death. So that defines a real father or mother. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada gives examples. It's actually in Sridhar Swami's commentary. He gives examples that it's the duty of the disciple to obey the guru. But Bali Maharaj disobeyed his guru, Shukracharya, when his guru told him not to surrender to Vishnu, because he wasn't acting as a real guru. Similarly, it's the duty of this, because he wasn't helping him to become free from the repetition of birth and death, which is only possible by surrendering to Vishnu. It is the duty of the son to protect the father if the father's attacked. But when Hiranyakasipu was attacked by Nrisimhadeva, Prahlad Maharaj did not try to defend him. But that was not a fault, because Hiranyakasipu was not a real father, because he was not helping his son to be delivered from the repetition of birth and death. Similarly, it's the duty of the son to obey the mother. But when Kaikeyi ordered Bharat to sit on the throne, he refused. But that was not a fault, because she was not acting as a real mother, because she was not helping him become liberated from the repetition of birth and death. And similarly, it's the duty of... Anyway, there are other... So, now the question is about your parents. It's your duty to serve them. The question is, are they real parents? To what extent are they real parents? Are they, you know, helping you, encouraging you to become liberated from the repetition of birth and death? I mean, if their mood was, you know, to encourage you to surrender to Krishna and be delivered, I would think they would appreciate why you wanted to stay here. I mean, I don't know your parents, so I can't really say too much, but hypothetically, that's one thing. The other thing is, in the case of Hiranyakashipu, he was delivered by Nrisimhadeva. Of course, he was killed by Nrisimhadeva, but beyond being killed by him, because Prahlad Maharaj wanted him to be purified by the Lord did purify him. And he said to Prahlad that, you know, not only your father, but, you know, 21 generations, or 3 times 7 generations, will all be purified. So if you become a pure devotee, then automatically your parents will be delivered. And whatever service you do, they will get some of the credit, because they gave you the body. If you engage your body in the service of the Lord, they get some of the credit because they gave you your body. You know, if you use your education in the service of the Lord, they get some of the credit because they contributed to your education. You know, if it is like that, if you use your money in the service of the Lord and some of the money came from them, they get part of the credit. So you can do a lot for them just by being a devotee and engaging in devotional service, even if you're not interacting with them face to face, or even if they've left the world, left the body. You know, as far as whether you should have gone back or not, or, you know, I can't really say, but whatever it is, you are in a position to help them even now. You can discharge your duty now, and the only way you can really discharge it is by serving Krishna and being Krishna conscious. But yes, when I was in Houston last month, almost every program, someone would come up to me afterwards in the same dilemma. Their parents want them to go back. A lot of them are on H-1 visas. They're on contract. So when their contract is over, their parents want them to come back. But they feel if they go back, they'll just get entangled in Maya and they'll do better in Krishna consciousness in America. So they're in that dilemma, that duality. That's that duality. Should I or shouldn't I? But one, I mean, I never answer directly. I mean, I could, but in these cases I didn't. But one, I think, just by general discussions after a period of days, I mean, it was really hot, you know, this question. I don't even know if he stuck to it, but by the time I left, he'd got the idea that he should stay and that would be the best thing he could do. And his wife wanted to stay, and his children wanted to stay.
But on day to day, like if I'm not completed my round, so I should not say, "Oh, I have to complete my round. Then only I can help you in the kitchen or anywhere, my kids or my wife." Right? That is also. Sometimes you feel that you are trying to pass on the bark or taking protection.
What you need to do is, you know, sit together. I mean, judging from what your wife said tonight, she's a devotee. You're a devotee. You want to be Krishna conscious. She wants to be Krishna conscious to some degree. So try to make some plan that will enable you to have enough time to chant and enable her to have enough time to chant. I mean, if you're helping in the kitchen, anyway, it can be complicated. It can be complicated. So we won't deal in too much detail here, but try to find a way that all of your material and spiritual needs can be met together. Yeah, at one japa retreat, it's very interesting. Both the husband and wife were struggling to finish their rounds because they had a small child. And then somehow they thought, it wasn't clearly defined. Then somehow they thought, well, we'll take turns. You know, 2 hours a day, I'll have the child and you can chant your rounds. And for 2 hours a day, you have the child and I'll chant my rounds. And they made that adjustment so that way the child was always cared for, but the parents had enough free time to chant their rounds, just by making a clear definition that would enable them both to chant and enable the child to be looked after. Good to discuss clearly and openly.